Principia Mechanicum. 1.01. Swathed in faded and tattered robes of rust red, the six Mechanicum protectors stood unmoving before her, as still as the towering statues of the Magi that had stared down upon the thousands of scribes within the great hall of transcription of the Librarium Technologica. Their iron-shod boots were locked tight into the ship's deck restraints, while she had had to hold on to a metal stanchion just to avoid cracking her head on its fuselage or tumbling around the hold when it had taken off. The interior of the ship was bare and unadorned, as functional as it was possible to be. No unnecessary decorations or aesthetic elements designed to ease the eye were included in its design, perfectly epitomizing the organization to which it belonged. Dahlia Cythera ran a hand through her cropped blonde hair, feeling the dirt and grease there, and longing for one of her weekly rotations in the Windward Sump's ablutions block. She had a feeling, however, that her cleanliness was the furthest thing from the minds of the protectors. None of them had spoken to her other than to confirm her name when they had removed her from the cell beneath the Librarium, in which Magos Ludd had locked her a week earlier. He discovered the enhancements she'd made to the inner workings of her cogitator, and had hauled her from the workline in a rage, angry hashes of binaric static canting from his vocalizer. 7 days alone in complete darkness had almost broken her. She remembered squeezing into a tiny ball when the cell door finally opened, and she saw the bronze death masks of the protectors, their gleaming weapon staves and the unforgiving light of their eyes. Ludd's blurted protests at the protectors' intrusion soon ceased when they invited him to scan the biometric security encryptions carried within their staves. She was frightened of the protectors, but then she guessed she was supposed to be. Their masters in the Mechanicum had designed them that way, with their enhanced bulk, weaponized limbs and glowing green eyes that shone unblinking behind bronze, skull-faced masks. Within moments, she had been hauled from the cell and dragged through the cavernous, echoing scriptoria where she'd spent the last 2 years of her life, her limbs loose and weak. Thousands upon thousands of robed scribes, ordnance, curators, and form stampers filled the scriptoria, and as she was carried towards the enormous arch that led to the world beyond, she realized she would be sad to leave the knowledge that passed through it. She would not miss the people, for she had no friends here, and no colleagues. None of the pallid-skinned adepts looked up from the monotony of their work, the sea-green glow of their cogitators and the flickering lumen globes floating in the dusty air, leeching their wizened features of life and animation. Such a state of being was foreign to Dahlia, and it never failed to amaze her that her fellow scribes were so blind to the honour of what they did. The recovered knowledge of Terra, and the new wonders sent back from across the galaxy by the thousands of remembrances accompanying the expeditions of the Great Crusade, passed through this chamber. Despite the glorious flood of information carefully logged and filed within the great libraries of Terra, every one of the faceless minions ceaselessly, blindly, ground themselves into old age, repeating the same bureaucratic and administrative tasks every waking hour of every day, oblivious or uncaring of the wealth of information to which they were privy. Without the insight or even the will to question the task they had been given to perform, the scribes shuffled from their habstacks through the same kilometres of well-trodden corridors every day, and performed their duties without question, thought, or awe. The rustle of paper was what Dahlia imagined the ocean to sound like, the clatter of adding machines and the rattle of brass keys and the typesetters like the motion of uncounted pebbles on a beach. Of course, Dahlia had never seen the things she imagined, for the seas of terror had long since boiled away in forgotten wars, but the words she read as she copied text from the reams of paper and armfuls of data slates carried in daily by muscled servitors had filled her mind with possibilities of worlds and ideas that existed far beyond the confines of Terra's mightiest scriptorium. Emerging from the musty darkness of the Librarium Technologica, she had been blinded by the brightness of the day, the sky a brilliant white, and the sun a hazy orb peeking through scraps of clouds, the colour of corrosion. The air was cold and thin at this altitude. She could just make out the tips of the slate-coloured mountains that crowned the world over the teeming roofs and spires crammed together in this part of the Imperial Palace. She had longed to see the mountains in all their glory, but her escorts marched her through dark streets that sweated steam and oil and voices towards an unknown destination without pause. That destination turned out to be a landing platform, upon which sat a vapor-wreathed starship, its hull still warm and groaning from the stresses of an atmospheric entry. She was led into the cavernous hold and deposited on the floor, while the protectors took up their allocated positions and the maglocks secured them to the deck. With a juddering roar and sudden lurch, the starship lifted off, and Dahlia was thrown to her knees by the violence of the ascent. Fear gripped her, and she clung to a protruding stanchion as the angle of incline increased sharply. The thought that she was leaving the planet of her birth struck her forcefully, and she experienced terrible panic at the thought of venturing beyond her known horizons. No sooner had she chided herself for such timidity than the panic subsided, and she felt her stomach cramp as she realized how hungry she was. The roaring of the starship and the vibrations on its hull grew louder and more violent until she was sure the craft was going to tear itself apart. Eventually, the noise changed in tone, and the starship began to level out, powering through the void at unimaginable speeds. She was traveling on a starship. With a moment free to think, she now wondered where she was going and why the mechanic and protectors had plucked her from the librarium's cells, and for what purpose. Curiously, she felt no fear of this strange voyage, but she attributed that lack to the mystery and interest of it being enough to overshadow any wariness she felt. Over the next day or so, her escorts, she did not now think of them as captors, resisted her every attempt at communication, save to instruct her to eat and drink, which she did ravenously, despite the food's chemical artificiality. They did not move from their locked positions at all during the journey, standing as mute guardians and offering her no diversion save in the study of their forms. Each one was tall and powerfully built, their physiques gene-bulked and augmented with implanted weaponry. Ribbed cables and coloured wires threaded their robes and penetrated their flesh through raw-looking plugs embedded in their skin. She had seen protectors before, but she had never been so close to one. They smelled unpleasantly of rotten meat, machine oil, and stale sweat. They were armed with giant pistols with flaring barrels and tall staves of iron topped with a bronze and silver cog, from which hung a scrap of parchment that fluttered in the gusting air within the cold compartment. A set of numbers was written on the parchment, arranged in a 4x4 grid, and Dahlia quickly worked out that each line added up to the same number, no matter which way they were combined, vertically, horizontally, or diagonally. Not only that, but each of the quadrants, the four center squares, the corner squares, and many other combinations, added up to the same figure.
34, she said. It's always 34.
The design was familiar to her, and Dahlia knew she had seen it before. No sooner had she wondered where than the answer came to her.
The Melancholia,
said Dahlia, nodding at the parchment.
What did you say?
Asked the protector. His voice was human, but echoed with a metallic rasp beneath his bronze mask, and Dahlia was momentarily taken aback that he'd actually responded to something she said.
The symbol on your parchment, she said. It's from an engraving. I saw it in a book I transcribed 2 years ago.
2 years ago? And you still remember it?
Yes,
nodded Dahlia, hesitantly.
I kind of remember stuff I've read and don't forget it.
It is the symbol of our master,
said the protector.
It's from an engraving of one of the old master prints,
said Dahlia, her eyes taking on a glazed look as she spoke, talking more to herself than to the protector.
It was so old, but then everything we transcribe in the Great Hall that's not from the expedition fleets is old. It was a picture of a woman, but she looked frustrated, as if she was annoyed at not being able to invent something ingenious. She had all sorts of equipment around her, weights, an hourglass, and a hammer, but she looked sad, as if she just couldn't get the idea to take shape.
The protectors glanced at one another as Dahlia spoke, each one gripping his stave tightly. Dahlia caught the look, and her words trailed off.
What?
She asked. The protector disengaged the maglock clamp securing him to the deck and stepped towards her.
The suddenness of his motion took her by surprise, and she stumbled backwards, falling onto her backside as he loomed over her, the green glow of his eyes shining brightly within his tattered hood.
"I begin to see why we were sent to fetch you," said the Protector.
"You do?" asked Dahlia. "And you were sent for me? Me? Dahlia Cythera?"
"Yes, Dahlia Cythera. Rho-Mu-31 was sent to fetch you from Terra."
"Rho-Mu-31?
"That is our designation," said the Protector.
"What, all of you?"
"All of us. Each of us. It is all the same."
"All right. But why were you sent to fetch me?" asked Dahlia.
"We were sent to fetch you before you were executed."
"Executed?"
exclaimed Dahlia.
"For what?"
"Magos Lud invoked the law of the divine complexity," explained Rho-Mu-31. "Individuals so accused attract the attention of our master."
Dahlia thought for a moment, her eyes fluttering beneath their lids, as she recalled what that law concerned.
"Let me think.
That's the belief that the structure and working of each machine has been set down by the Omnisire, and is therefore divine, and that to alter it is... Oh.
You see now why we came for you."
"Not really,"
admitted Dahlia.
"Anyway, who is your master? And what does he want with me? I'm just a transcriber of remembrance. I'm nobody."
Rho-Mu-31 shook his head, making a fist and placing it over the silver and bronze cog atop his staff.
"You are more than you realize, Dahlia Cythera," he said. "But that, and more, will become clear to you when you meet our master. High Adept Coriel Zeth, mistress of the Magma City."
"The Magma City?" asked Dahlia. "Where is that?"
"At the edge of the Daedalia Planum, on the southern flank of Orsaya Mons," said Rho-Mu-31, lifting his stave and touching it to an opaque panel on the vibrating hull of the starship.
A flickering light crackled, and the panel began to change, slowly becoming more and more translucent until finally it was virtually transparent. When this transformation was complete, Dahlia gasped at the sight before her, her face bathed in a fiery red glow from the planet below. Its surface was clad in fire and metal, its atmosphere choked with striated clouds of pollution. Teeming with gargantuan sprawls of industry larger than the continents of old Earth, the world seemed to throb with the heartbeat of monstrous hammers. Plumes of fire and towering stacks of iron rose from its mountainous southern regions, and networks of gleaming steel spread out like cracks in the ground, through which fractured light spilled into the sky.
"Is that
Mars?" confirmed Rho-Mu-31. "Domain of the Mechanicum."
Supersonic shells tore through the gaggle of servitors feeding on the dead technomats, obliterating one instantly and blowing the limbs from another. Three others staggered back, chunks of flesh blasted from their emaciated frames. They refused to fall, however, their damaged brains unable to comprehend how grievously the guns of Cronus's knight had wounded them.
"All yours, Maven,"
said Cronos, cutting off the stream of shells.
"So glad you left me something to do," replied Maven.
Maven moved Equitos Bellum in behind the bloody servitors, the energized blade in his war machine's right fist reaching down and slicing through the servitors in one sweep. Old Stator finished off the stragglers with a short, perfectly controlled burst of laser fire, their wasted bodies exploding in puffs of vaporized blood and scrap metal. Standing five times the height of the feral creatures, the three knights towered over the battlefield, though Maven knew that to call it such was to vastly overstate the nature of the deaths they had caused. The knights were armored in thick plates of plasteel and ceramite, protected by layered banks of power field strong enough to weather the impact of a much larger engine's wrath, and armed with weapons that could kill scores at a time. The plates of their armor were a deep midnight blue, the right shoulder of each one painted with the design of a wheel encircling a lightning bolt. The same design was repeated on the long cream-colored banners hanging between the mechanized legs of all three war machines, the heraldry of the Knights of Taranis. Maven rode in Equitos Bellum, an honorable mount with a host of battle honors earned in the earliest days of the Great Crusade. It had fought the enemies of the Imperium beneath a dozen different skies, and even marched alongside the salamanders of Primarch Vulcan. The design of a fire drake carved into the skull cockpit of the knight recalled that campaign, and Maven never tired of telling the stories of that glorious ride into battle. His studious brother-in-arms, Kronos, rode in Pax Mortis, and old Stator commanded the august majesty of Fortis Metallum. All three war machines had earned their share of glory on the battlefields of the Imperium, marching ahead of the Titan engines, the god machines. The knights of Taranis were feted among the warriors of Mars for their martial achievements, revered for their place in Martian history, and lauded for the wisdom of their commanders. Even the mighty princeps of the Titan legions were known to seek the wise counsel of the Order's masters, for Lords Verticorda and Catarix were known as leaders whose shared command blended the warrior's heart with the diplomat's cool.
So, why in the name of the Omnisire are we stuck out in the arse end of nowhere culling feral servitors?
He asked himself, before remembering that the manifold link between the knights was still open.
We're here because those are our orders, Maven, said Stator. Do you have a problem with that?
No, Preceptor, replied Maven, his tone contrite. I just meant that it seems like such a waste of our strength. Can't Magos Maximal's protectors perform their own culls?
Not as well as we can, said Kronos,
his answer sounding like it came from a training manual. Maven felt his lip curl in a sneer at his brother's sycophancy.
Exactly, Kronos, said Stator. We've been given a duty to protect this reactor complex, and there is honor in duty, no matter how far beneath us it might seem.
Maven sensed an opening and said,
But the Knights of Taranis once marched with a crusade. We fought alongside heroes of the Imperium, and now all we do is shoot feral servitors that come up out of the Paladus. There's no glory in this work. These days the threats to the Warmaster's campaigns require forces stronger than us, said Stator,
but Maven could sense the bitterness beneath his words.
The Great Crusade is almost over.
And what will be left for us?
Demanded Maven, emboldened by Stator's words.
There must be expeditions that need the skills of our order.
The expeditions do not ask for knights, said Stator. They ask for the god machines to walk with their armies. Our role is to protect Mars and maintain the traditions of our order, and part of that tradition is honoring our obligations. Is that understood, Maven?
Yes, Preceptor, said Maven.
Now let's finish this sweep and make sure there are no more of them. Maximal needs this facility kept safe, and Lord Catarix swore that we would do so.
Maven sighed and walked his knight to where humming power cables jutted from the hard, orange earth, and spat sparks where the servitors had dug at them to feed the machine parts of their ravaged bodies. The corpses of the technomats and artificers sent to fix the damage lay in pools of blood that were already congealing in the heat that bled from the fusion reactor further back in the gorge.
Check for more of them out there, Kronos, ordered Stator. They usually hunted bigger packs than this.
Yes, Preceptor,
replied Kronos, marching his knight past the dead servitors and through the gap torn in the barbed, chain-link fence that surrounded the reactor. Kronos guided his machine up the rocky slopes to check the ground behind an outcrop of boulders. To maneuver so large a machine as a knight over such rough terrain was no mean feat, and Maven was forced to admire his brother's skill as a pilot. Fortis Metallum's upper body swiveled around on its gimbal waist mount to face Maven, and though he couldn't see his preceptor's face through the red visor of the cockpit, he could feel the stern, unflinching gaze through the softly glowing slits.
Keep an eye on our rear, in case any slipped past us, ordered Stator,
his voice once again as grim and inflexible as the posture of his machine.
I'll hold you responsible if they have.
Yes, Preceptor, replied Maven. I'm on it.
It was a Martian truism that if a warrior and machine spent enough time linked together, they would begin to take on aspects of the other's character. Fortis Metallum was an old machine, cantankerous, flinty, and utterly without mercy. It was the perfect match for Stator. Maven had met countless Titan drivers, and it was easy to tell which machines they commanded within moments of talking to them. Warhound drivers were belligerent, wolf-like daredevils, whereas the men who fought from the towering battle Titans were arrogant and ego-driven warriors who often appeared to hold those around them in contempt. Maven knew that such conceit was forgivable, for marching to war so high above the battlefield and unleashing such awesome destructive power would naturally swell a man's ego, but it was also a necessary defense against the engine's character overwhelming that of its commander. Maven walked his machine backwards in a bravura display of skill, watching as Stator turned away to follow Cronus through the mangled remains of the security fencing. A knight was much smaller than a titan, but the mechanics in its construction and operation were no less incredible. A titan had a crew to maintain its systems, a servitor to man each weapon system, a steersman to drive it, a tech priest to minister to its bellicose heart, a moderati to run the crew, and a princeps to command it. A knight was the perfect meld of flesh and steel, a mighty war machine at the command of a single pilot, a warrior who had the confidence to wield its power and the humility to know that, despite that power, he was not invincible. Maven strode back towards the reactor complex, spreading his Auspex net wide to pick up any of the feral servitors that might have broken away from the main pack, though he suspected he would not find any. Even if he did, what threat did a few servitors represent? Broken and irreparably damaged servitors, or those whose cranial surgery had failed to take, were often simply dumped in the Palladus, the name given to the toxic, ashen hinterlands that existed between the Martian forges. The vast majority died, but some survived, though to call their doomed existence life was overstating the reality of it. Most simply attempted to carry out the task for which they had been created, marching back and forth through the wastelands, with their fried brains unable to comprehend that they were no longer in service. In some cases, the damage to their brains allowed them a fragile degree of autonomy, and those unfortunate creatures survived by feasting on the dead. Drawn by warmth and power, many banded together in unthinking packs and infested Mechanicum facilities, attacking workers and draining current to sustain their wretched experience. Such creatures required culling, which brought Maven's thoughts full circle. He lifted his head, the motion of the knight's cranial carapace following exactly. The crags around the reactor were empty and desolate, the red volcanic peaks scoured by dust clouds blown up by the high winds funneled along the northern fossae. The heart of the reactor facility sat 600 meters back from the fencing that surrounded it, a collection of intricate buildings of pipes, cables, and crackling antenna towers. A huge domed structure sat in the middle of the complex, its surface studded with plugs and vents. The air rippled around the building, and intense waves of heat and electromagnetism washed from it in tidal surges. The trench of the Gigas fossae was dotted with several fusion reactors, but the facility upon the rocky slope surrounding the northern impact craters of Ulysses Patera was the largest and had been built by Magos Epluvian Maximal. Adept Maximal was one of the most senior magi of Mars, and his fusion reactors supplied power to a great many vassal forges dotted around the Tharsis uplands. Such arrangements were common across the Red Planet, ancient treaties binding the clans and forges together in reciprocal pacts of protection and supply that allowed such varied groups with conflicting needs to coexist. As well as allied forges, Maximal had exchanged bonds of fealty and supply with a number of warrior orders, including many of the most revered Titan Legios.
"So why aren't they here?" Maven muttered to himself. "Too busy arguing amongst themselves is why."
Maven put thoughts of the increasing tensions on Mars from his mind and made his way forwards, swinging the Auspex around by twisting his mount's upper body, pulverizing boulders as its enormous weight crushed them beneath its stride. He needed to cover every approach to the reactor complex, and threat or not, Stator would haul him over the coals were any feral servitors to get past him. He felt the rocks break beneath Equitos Bellum's feet, the sensation akin to having his body and senses magnified to the size of the night. Mechanic and protector squads at the edge of the reactor complex saw him and bowed respectfully as his knight shook the ground with its heavy strides. Menials and servitors labored to maintain the giant reactor functions, their movements slow and sluggish in heavily reinforced hazmat suits. A huge transformer crackled with energy flares, meters-thick cabling and a lattice of conductor towers linking it to the reactor. Blue lightning sparked from the transformer, rippling along the length of ductwork that was visible before the cables delved beneath the regolith and bedrock towards destinations all across the quadrant of Tharsis. Maven blinked as he felt a tremor through the Orspec's return, a fleeting impression of something moving on the far side of the reactor. He focused his attention on that part of the cockpit display, enhancing the imagery in an attempt to see what he was receiving.
"Blood of the machine,"
he swore, as the Orspec's connected with something big, something throwing off a spider-like pattern of electromagnetic energy much larger than a servitor. For the briefest second, it appeared as though a great many other signals accompanied it. An instant later, and it was gone, blinked out as though it had never existed. More ghost returns faded in and out, and Maven was suddenly unsure as to whether he'd seen anything at all. A knight's Orspex was hardwired into the pilot's senses via a spinal plug, and interpreting the incoming data streams was an art form in itself, a blend of intuition and hard fact. In any case, it was difficult to be sure of anything in this region, the flare-offs and radiation bleeds from the reactor playing havoc with the veracity of Orspec's returns. Then, the spider pattern flashed again, and this time he was certain. Something was out there, and it wasn't squawking on any friendly channel.
"Preceptor, I think I have something," said the voice.
"Define something, Maven,"
came the voice of Preceptor Stator.
"I'm not sure, but it's coming from the opposite side of the reactor complex." "More servitors?"
asked Cronus. Maven chewed his bottom lip, willing the sensor return to come again so he could report something more concrete. But the portion of the manifold dedicated to Orspec's returns remained steadfastly awash with background radiation. Still, he was sure that whatever was out there was more than simply feral servitors.
"No," he said. "Something bigger."
The starship banked as its pilot adjusted the angle of attack to allow it to enter the atmosphere safely. The view through the panel that Rho Mu 31 had rendered transparent slid away, and Dahlia wrapped her knuckles against it.
"I'm assuming this isn't glass," she said. "What is it?"
"Photomalleable steel," said Rho Mu 31. "A burst of current from my stave alters the structure of the molecular bonds within the metal, to allow certain forms of light waves to pass through it."
"I haven't heard of anything like it,"
said Dahlia, amazed at the potential for such a material.
"Few beyond the Magma City have," said Rho Mu 31. "It is a creation of Adept Zeth."
Dahlia nodded and returned her attention to the view through the transparent metal. No sooner had she done so than she found herself staring in wonder at an array of enormous structures, surely too large to have been created by the artifice of mere humans. Colossal orbital constructions filled the heavens above Mars, a near-contiguous array of gigantic shipyards and construction facilities. Dahlia pressed her face to the cold panel, craning her neck to see how far the unbelievable conglomeration stretched. Try as she might, she could see no end to the gleaming docks, one end of the arc of steel rising up beyond sight above the ship she travelled in, the other vanishing around the curve of the red planet.
"The Ring of Iron," said Rho Mu 31. "The original exploratory fleets were constructed here, and much of the expeditionary fleets were built in these docks."
"It's huge,"
said Dahlia, cursing herself for stating something so obvious.
"They are the largest space docks in the galaxy. Though the shipwrights of Jupiter will soon lay claim to the largest ship ever constructed when they complete the Furious Abyss."
Dahlia heard wounded pride in Rho Mu 31's remark and smiled at the notion that a servant of the Mechanicum would display envy. She returned her gaze to the sight beyond the starship's hull, seeing firefly sparks dotting the Ring of Iron where new vessels were being constructed by armies of shipwrights.
"What's that?"
she asked, pointing towards what appeared to be a nebulous cloud of dust and reflective particles just over the horizon.
"That is the remains of an active construction site," said Rho Mu 31. "The latest ships to be built here have but recently departed."
"Where have they gone?"
asked Dahlia, eager to learn what far-off place the new vessels were bound for.
"They were commissioned for Battlefleet Solar," explained Rho Mu 31. "But the War Master issued a new tasking order to have them dispatched to take part in the Istvan campaign."
Dahlia heard the note of disapproval in Romeo 31's voice, as though it were the greatest sin imaginable to change procedure and alter previously issued orders.
"Look, there is the fleet they were to join," said Romeo 31,
indicating berths high above them, and Dahlia's mouth dropped open as the mighty warships of Battlefleet Solar came into view. Distance rendered the fleet small, but to even recognize them and identify individual vessels from so far told Dahlia that they were craft of unimaginable scale. From here, they were sleek darts with sloping angular prows like ploughs, and long gothic bodies like great palaces hurled into the heavens and wrought into the forms of starships. The ships were soon lost to sight as creeping fire slid along the length of the starship, the heat of passing through the atmosphere of Mars rippling along the shielded hull of the vessel. Dahlia felt a steadying hand on her shoulder, a heavy, metallic hand that gripped her tightly as the starship continued its descent. Flames and heat distortions soon obscured the view, but within the space of a few minutes it faded, and Dahlia saw the surface of Mars in all its glory. Vast cities of steel, larger and more magnificent than any of the hives of Terra, reared up from the surface, gargantuan behemoths that vomited fire and smoke into the sky. It was called the Red Planet, but precious little remained of the surface that could be identified as that hue. Mountains had been clad in metal and light, and cities and districts perched on the peaks and plateau of the world named for a long-forsaken god of war. Glittering streams of light twisted and snaked through the few areas of cratered wilderness between the unimaginably vast conurbations, transit routes and maglev lines, and towering pyramids of glass and steel reared up like the tombs of forgotten kings.
"I've read about Mars, but I never thought to see it,"
breathed Dahlia. To see so many wondrous things in so short a time was nothing less than overwhelming.
"The Martian priesthood does not encourage visitors," said Romeo 31. "They believe the soil of Mars to be sacred."
"Isn't the idea of things being sacred, well, not allowed anymore?"
"In a manner of speaking, yes," agreed Romeo 31. "The Emperor advances the credo that belief in gods is a falsehood, but a condition of the Treaty of Olympus was that he swore not to interfere with our structures and society when Mars and Terra were joined."
"So, the Mechanicum believes in a god?"
"That is a question with no easy answer, Dahlia Cythera. I do not believe in faith, but ask no more, for we are coming into land, and you will need to hold on tightly."
Dahlia nodded as the ship banked sharply, and she watched the world below tilt crazily as the pilot brought them around a shining pyramid bathed in light and topped with a great carving of an eye.
"The Temple of All Knowledge," said Romeo 31,
anticipating her question. Dahlia felt her stomach lurch as the ship dropped suddenly and a thick curtain of yellow smog obscured the view outside. They flew through the smog for several hours until, as suddenly as it had appeared, it vanished, and Dahlia cried out in terror as she saw that they were heading straight into the glassy black flanks of a towering mountain.